Welcome into Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. 713 call now. This is our best of version, and tonight we take you back to some of our favorite interviews of the year 2023. We have proudly brought soccer talk to the radio in Houston since 2001. Let's get started. It is Messi Mania right now. Everything that he does is being covered and followed. And of course, there's no better person to talk to than from the Miami Herald. She is Michelle Kaufman, longtime supporter of the game in this country and covering it and now into the Messi period. And Michelle, thank you very much for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
Sure. Yeah, it's been crazy. I mean, just every moment of it. My life changed on June 7th. I can tell you, I was actually under the Eiffel Tower on vacation with my husband when I got a call from a very good source that this was going to happen on that day and that wherever I am, I should get near a computer. And I said, oh, no, I just left the Musée d'Orsay. I'm standing under the Eiffel Tower. And the person said, well, you might want to see if they have Wi-Fi there because you're going to be working today. And from that moment forward, it's been a whirlwind, to be honest.
That's kind of ironic. You were in Paris with Paris.
I was there on the day. Yes, you know? I was there and he was there. I don't know why he didn't invite me to the little powwow. You know, I think I should have been invited. But it was funny that I was in Paris and he was probably, who knows, he may have been 200 yards away from me. I have no idea. But yeah, it was a crazy day. And you know, ever since then, I mean, the buzz in Miami, you know, Miami, people sometimes say Miami's not a good sports town or whatever. When it comes to soccer, I mean, this place is crazy for soccer, particularly the Latin American fans that are here. And there are roughly 150,000 Argentines that live in Miami and Miami and South Florida. And then that doesn't even count the Colombians, the Brazilians, the Paraguayans, the Venezuelans, all the people from Central America, from the Caribbean. It's a huge, huge soccer market. Especially for international soccer. And so Messi is, you know, he's a god everywhere, but he really is a god here. And so in the last few weeks, gigantic murals, I've written stories about it. You know, huge murals have popped up all over giant buildings in downtown Miami. Artists have come from Argentina to paint these huge murals that you see in Argentina, Buenos Aires. All of a sudden, they're all over Miami. The Messi's face is everywhere all over Miami. And, you know, it's just been crazy. I had the practice today, his first training session that was open to the media. And they allowed 200 media, credentialed media to come in. They had to cap it at 200. I think there were more like 400 credential requests to go to the training. 200 people. I will tell you that for the last 3.5 years, I've been covering soccer in this market since the Miami Fusion days. But as far as Inter Miami goes, in the last 3.5 years that I've been covering this team, I was often the only person at the training. It was me, Phil Neville, and the team, or, you know, me and Diego Alonso and the team. Sometimes there were two or three others. There was, you know, maximum three or four at the maximum reporters that would come to training. And oftentimes I was the only one. And, you know, I would drive over there an hour and 10 minutes and sit there. But, you know, I always thought it was cool to go and sort of get some FaceTime with the team. Well, now I am one of 200 people. I mean, the security guards are just shoving me aside the way they throw everyone else aside. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm the OG. I am Michelle Kaufman. Do you not know who I am? I've been here every day. I'm here when I'm interviewing Noah Allen and you know, interviewing Yedlin and interviewing Breck Shea and, you know, Will Trapp and Luis, you know, Robles. But here we are now with Messi and Busquets on the field today. I really could not believe my eyes. I mean, I know that this has really happened. I saw it with my own eyes today. I saw him there running around with the team. And it's still mind-boggling to
me
that they were able to do this.
Me just cut you off for a second because I want to make sure everybody knows who you are. It's Michelle Kaufman, Miami Herald, as you're mentioning there. So I want to ask you some questions about some things specifically. And she's with the Miami Herald. She is at Kauf Sports on Twitter, K-A-U-F Sports, at Kauf Sports on Twitter. Great writer. Michelle, so based on the fact that you have been the only one there, is there anybody in the organization that's kind of like going, hey, we need to show Michelle Kaufman a little bit of loyalty here?
Oh yes, absolutely. I mean,
Okay.
I did a one-on-one, well, two-on-one this afternoon with David Beckham and Jorge Mas. And I was the only, I was really the only local and the only print outlet that got to do an exclusive, just by myself. There was a round table with some other reporters who cover the team
Good.
fairly regularly. But yeah, they have been very good. Jorge, in fact, right at the beginning, Jorge decided he wanted to give something to the four or five of us that have shown up all the way back from the beginning. So he did a Zoom call with us before they did any media with anybody else. He said, I want to take care of the locals who have been here from day one, and I
Excellent.
want to give them something. Give them something before the masses and the circus arrives. And so
Yeah.
we did have a very nice long conversation with him where he explained a lot of the background, how this came to be. And it was really very useful for those of us that cover the team regularly. So
Excellent.
yes, I would say that the club has been very good about not forgetting those of us who were there from the start.
She's Michelle Kaufman, Miami Herald at Kauf Sports, KAUFSPORTS. And by the way, your comment about Miami is really interesting because that's the same comment we get in Houston. And people go in droves to international soccer here, just like Miami. And there are a lot of similarities, maybe a little different demographic with the volume of people in certain communities. But the same thing happens here. It's just not been an MLS product city. And I know that's
Right.
been the same with Inter Miami, which is now going to change. All right. So I heard Jorge Mas say something about the potential, if the team went far in the Leagues Cup, that potentially the game could be played in the Dolphins Stadium. Now, I know the Dolphins owner is not too happy with MLS. Is that something that could be a reality? And, I kind of think of that even with regular league games. I mean, you can sell more than what Pink Stadium holds, right?
Yeah, that's it. That's been a big question. Dry Pink Stadium only holds 19. They added 3,000 more seats on. They added two little bleachers on the corners to make it 22,000. But right now, there's only 22,000 for the Lionel Messi games, and it's a nice temporary stadium. But it's a temporary stadium. It's basically a pink and black and gray Lego set, that they put up, and it's nice. I mean, they've done as good a job as they can. It really is. It's not a bad facility, but the capacity is small. And so everyone kept wondering, why don't they just play at Hard Rock? Why don't they just play at Hard Rock, which is 75,000? It is true that the Dolphin ownership and MLS, there's always been that sort of tug of war between Relevant Sports, which is his organization, Stephen Ross's organization, that brings over the international IFC, whatever it was called, the IFC or whatever they called it, the champions. They would bring over Chelsea or Manchester United or bring over Barcelona, Real Madrid, bring those teams over and play in the summer. And I think MLS's view was always like, why are you bringing this in the middle of our season, sort of to show like, oh, this is the real soccer here. These are the real teams that we're bringing over. So there's always been a little bit of a tension there. But I did speak to Jorge today about this. He said that, what he's talking about is US Open Cup for sure. US Open Cup, they're in the semifinal already.
Yeah.
They're playing at Cincinnati in the semifinal. If they win, if Miami wins, beats Cincinnati, and if Houston, by the way, is the opponent, the game would be in Miami, I believe. I don't know which one it is. I think it's Houston's playing Real Salt Lake, right? In the other
Yeah.
semi. One of those two scenarios, it's in Miami, and the other scenario would be on the road. If it's the one in Miami, he said that he has already been in talks with Tom Garfinkel of the Dolphin organization to possibly host the game there. He said that for a cup final, they would consider playing at Hard Rock or for some kind of a big event game. But he has said that the league games are still going to be at Drive Pink Stadium. That's what he has said. But it would not surprise me if they were to make a cup final that that final game would be played at Hard Rock Stadium.
Michelle Kaufman at Kauf Sports on Twitter, Miami Herald. She does an amazing job. She's given us great information in this interview. All right, so Lionel Messi's there, Sergio Busquets is there. It's now seems like Jordi Alba at the time of this interview. There's talks about Luis Suarez. How much conversation occurs amongst the reporters, and are they probing with the question, how is this working in an MLS league that has a salary cap?
Yep. Well, a lot of questions are being asked. Alba's coming in as a TAM player. They have been, the truth is, the first half of this season, they pretty much sacrificed the first half of this season for the second half in the future. They have been collecting, they have been gathering, like, you know, like squirrels gather acorns. This team has been gathering TAM and GAM and all the other letters that are in the MLS alphabet. They got rid of higher priced players. They have been starting four teenagers from the youth academy four. And actually the last game, there were five, one guy, 20 years old, and four teenagers were starting for the team. These are guys that are making minimum, who are literally coming up from the academy. So they've been saving a lot of money to use for these players that are coming in. And the other thing is, and this is partly from what I've been told and partly what I truly believe in my heart of hearts, that this situation is a very unique situation that we are seeing, which is that these guys, it's not about money. It really is not about money for this little group of players. Of, well, you know, Messi is making a ton of money. He's going to make a lot of money and he has all the sponsorships. For Busquets, for Jordi Alba, and Luis Suarez, if he were to come, they already have a lot of money. They are still getting money from Barcelona, residual money that's still coming, deferred money from, you know, back-ended contracts or whatever. This is what I've been told. So money is not their motivator. The motivator is, it's really two things. This is a little squad of guys. It's almost like a band that's doing a reunion tour, okay? These are Messi, it's Messi and friends. Messi and his closest friends want to play together before they all retire. They want to play together. They all love Miami. They vacation in Miami on a regular basis. They come here. Messi already has two luxury condominiums here. I think a couple of the other guys also rent condos here. They love this city. They love the fact that it's a Latin American city where everybody speaks Spanish. The reporters speak Spanish. That's actually been an issue a little bit, because there are only a couple of reporters in this market who don't speak Spanish, who cover soccer. And it's going to be difficult for them, because Tata Martino is only doing interviews in Spanish. Lionel Messi is only doing interviews in Spanish. Busquets does speak English, but the other ones don't. It's a very, very Latin team. A lot of the players speak Spanish here, and the coach now is Spanish only in the interviews. So they let you ask questions. I speak Spanish. My family's Cuban Jewish. We're Juban. So I do speak fluent Spanish. Yeah, we're Jubans. I do speak fluent Spanish, and that is a big benefit being on this team. The Anglo-only reporters are going to have a little bit of a tough time to keep up with the press conferences, where they do allow English reporters to ask questions, and they will translate the question to either Tata or to Lionel or whoever the player is, and then they'll translate the answer back into English. But they don't translate any of the parts that are being done in Spanish. So there's a whole conversation going on in Spanish, and Tata's telling jokes and everybody's laughing. And you're kind of, if you're not part of it, you don't understand it. You're a little bit on the outside looking in. So anyway, all that being said is my way of saying that these are three or four, if Suarez were to ever end up here, these are three or four guys who are very close friends, all Spanish speaking. They all love Miami. They're all friends of Messi. And for them, it's not about money. They are not, yes, they were making $15 million at Barcelona, and they're going to be making far, far less than that to come here. I mean, you know, less than $1 million, maybe 1.5 or less if they're TAM or whatever. What I've heard is these guys just want to play together, and they want to play with Messi, and they want to play in Miami, and they want to experience life in the United States. And they are really intrigued by MLS. They really are intrigued by MLS. They feel that it's a growing league. They like the Apple deal, that, you know, the fans all around the world can watch them on all the different continents, can tune into the games. And I just think it's kind of a perfect, it's just a very unusual scenario. But I really don't think that it's about money, but I think it's going to be hard to convince the public or the media of that. It just seems crazy. It just seems that they're going to have to bend a lot of rules, bend it like Beckham, you know, they're going to have to bend a lot of rules to bring in all these players. And people are saying, well, how in the world are they doing this? I think it's possible that these guys just are taking humongous pay cuts to come here. I really do think it's possible.
I agree. And I think I suspected that. And I think a lot of people suspected that at this stage of their careers. Talking to Michelle Kaufman at Kauf Sports on Twitter. I want to backtrack a little bit, though, to it being a very Hispanic team. Is that the direction David Beckham and Jorge Mas really want to lean this team? Is it really about making it a team that appeals more to the Hispanic fan in Miami?
Oh, there is no question. And that's actually been the plan from day one, from the Miami Fusion. The plan from MLS was that the Miami team was going to be the Latin American team. The adopted team of all of Latin America was going to be the Miami team. They wanted this team when they brought in Carlos Valderrama, you know, as the main player on that team for the Fusion. The idea was this team was going to be in the urban core of Miami, in the middle of the Hispanic neighborhood. Hispanic families would walk to the games. The stars on the team were going to be Spanish speaking. Most of the top players who played for the Miami Fusion were Spanish speaking players. The first coaches that they brought in were Argentine and Brazilian coaches. And so, you know, the idea from way back from 1997, the idea was this is going to be a Latin American MLS team that is going to expand the reach of this league into South and Central America. And people from those countries are going to want to wear Miami shirts and follow these teams. And right now, this is a perfect opportunity. I mean, all of the signage, the songs that the fans hear, La Familia, the fan group is called La Familia. All of the songs are in Spanish. I don't even know if there's one English one that's sung. There are a couple, but most of it is in Spanish. the players speak Spanish. When Phil Neville was here, he actually does speak some Spanish that he learned at Valencia. But, you know, most of the practices were conducted in English. With Tata and his group, I've already heard, the practices are being run in Spanish. The press conferences are being run in Spanish with a few English questions being asked. So, yes, this is going to be a very, very Spanish-leaning, Hispanic-leaning team. There's no question about it.
Michelle.
And they're not apologizing. They're not apologizing for it. They're not.
Well, good for them. I mean, if they're not apologizing for it, they're making it very clear to the public, and I think that's a great thing. Michelle, this is great stuff. You got some good times and a lot of work in front of you. I can sense your excitement in the interview. I love it. Keep it up. Enjoy the situation, because Lionel Messi just landed in your backyard. You're going to have a great time and do a great job covering it. Thank you for coming on tonight.
Sure. Thanks. Thanks for having me. It's always fun to talk to you.
Welcome into Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm. 713 call now, daspitlaw.com. We continue on with the best of Soccer Matters. This is a great local story because our next guest, Houston area youth product, went on to play professionally in Major League Soccer, got into the coaching side of things after his playing career, recently got named the New Mexico United USL Championship head coach. They're coming off a 3-0 win over Sacramento. They are 4-1-2 since he took over, and they have now climbed in the Western division when it comes to their standings. He is Eric Quill. Many of you will know him, and he joins us now. Eric, thanks so much for coming on.
My pleasure, Glenn. Always fun to speak to you.
Yeah, it's good. All right, 4-1-2 since taking over. Before we get into the current form of the team, last we knew, you were assistant coach in Columbus. That ended with Caleb Porter being moved on. This opportunity, how did it arrive? How'd you decide to take it, and how quick of a kind of run has this been for you?
Yeah, it was really kind of a surprise out of nowhere. I got a text from an unknown number and asking me if I'd be interested in a USL championship head coaching job. And, of course, I'm interested and wanted to know more. So I called the number back because I didn't have it saved. And it was a sporting director here, Itamar Kainen. And we started talking, and he asked if I'd be willing to sort of formally interview. because they had a head coach that was it was going to leave on for a better opportunity, and so he was going to look to try to find somebody pretty quickly. So we started the interview process pretty much right away, and I had known about New Mexico United from, I've kind of been watching him from a distance. A couple of years ago when I was in Dallas, they played FC Dallas in the Open Cup and was successful against Dallas. And so really kind of put them on the map in my mind. And I just kind of been paying attention from afar. And so just, and then studying the club and, you see this fan support here. The state is just really bought into the team here and they support it. If you watch any of the games, it's amazing the support they get. So I came and watched the game, and I was part of the sort of the fan experience, and that's what sold me was coming to see a live game and seeing the atmosphere. I just knew it was a place that I wanted to be and wanted to help.
Eric Will taking over for Zach Prince, New Mexico United. All right, so you get there. What's the first order of business? I mean, are you bringing in any staff members, or is it you currently, you just work with the staff that you inherit there after Zach Prince leaves?
Yep. I mean, we kept staff and they're great. And I feel very lucky about the staff because they're just amazing soccer minds and people. So I really lucked out and the environment I've joined. Just basically more me adapting to them than them adapting to me. Season has already been going, and my staff knows this roster better than I do. I mean, I obviously studied a bit before I took the job, but I really relied a lot on them to sort of, help me kind of get my feet under me. And we're doing well right now, and we're hoping to keep it going. But it's an everyday process that you got to keep invested in.
For the listeners, Eric also was at North Texas FC, as you remember, in the FC Dallas organization, and again, came over from the Columbus Crew. This after a long playing career in Major League Soccer and places like Kansas City with the Wizards. All right, so you get in there. How much do you change? I mean, mentality, tactics, personnel. I get that you're listening to the guys that have been around these players, but, what type of an impact can a coach have right away? Obviously, everybody's got to, set their flag in the ground with the new coach's eyes on them, but what do you do? Mentality, tactics, personnel.
The personnel was, that's one of the reasons why I took the job, was seeing the personnel was, there's some really quality players here. So I felt like it needed a style of play model. I think they were pretty direct and not a lot of, intricacies with the ball. So I really wanted to kind of change our identity with the ball. And create more freedom and creativity and then more structure and discipline without the ball. So we've really kind of created some real good discipline, when we don't have it, and playing to player strengths, getting used to the roster is putting these guys in positions that they'll be successful. And then, like myself, when you play free and you feel, like you can make mistakes and it's not going to be, these guys are willing, we're willing to allow mistakes, but it's our discipline when we lose it, how we get behind it. But these guys are coming up with ideas now, and there's some really good football that we're growing into week to week. So I'm excited about where we are, but I'm really more excited about where we're going.
Looked at the Sacramento highlights, Eric, and the environment just looked great. 3 goals. You beat a very, very good team. Amando Moreno has a goal and an assist. I'm reading the quotes from the players to your statement that you just made about players feeling free and enjoying the game more. You hear a lot of that coming from them. That doesn't mean you can necessarily do that. You felt you had the right players to be able to do that.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, so I get a lot of great veterans here that have been around a while, along with a good combination of young players coming up. And so it's a really well-balanced roster of guys committed, guys that have championship backgrounds to them in USL. So feel really lucky with the character we have in our locker room. And so I just needed to kind of feed their spirit and help change a couple things and we're rolling right now. So it's but it's always, like you said, like, you know, it's it can change on a dime. So we've got to really keep the mentality right. The mentality piece is crucial if you want something in the end. So we have our eyes on a prize, and we want to work every day to get there. And the intensity in our training environment's picked up, and the guys welcome that. Our staff has welcomed that. And it's just when you have these things clicking and the buy-in, it makes the job really fun.
He's Eric Quill. He's from the Houston area. Not only went on to play in Major League Soccer, but has really put together a great body of work from a coaching perspective, starting with youth soccer right on up to North Texas and player development at that level, and MLS associated with FC Dallas, on to being an assistant coach at Columbus, now heading up New Mexico United in the USL Championship, who are on the rise. They're 4-1-2 under Eric at this time. Let's talk about the environment, because even prior to you being there, I always just kind of love this thing going on in New Mexico, averaging 10,000 plus last year. There is a lot of community engagement, a lot of state engagement, and then a really cool stadium. They call it the Lab. It's a minor league baseball stadium, but it's actually a really cool environment. Just take us into all that and what you've experienced so far.
Well, it's just unique how the whole state gravitates towards New Mexico United. You have people that travel long distances to be at the games. It doesn't matter if it's a Wednesday night or a Saturday. They're coming out 10 plus every game. So it's just, when you're in the stadium, these guys aren't just sitting there idle in their seats. We've got the curse behind the goal that is rowdy all game long. The fan engagements, they're into it. They're soccer knowledgeable. So it makes, you know, 90 plus minutes of the game just really enjoyable and adrenaline rushed. Because you see the passion that they cheer with and they root with. So as I can't imagine what the players feel, because I'm just a coach on the sideline. I don't get to touch the ball. But from a coach's perspective, it's a lot of fun coming out of that tunnel and seeing the fan engagement.
Is it a good, healthy pressure that you would want for your players? Do you feel that? Because that's a necessary ingredient, right?
100%. I mean, especially with we're gonna, you know, young players coming in, and you know, the veterans obviously are used to playing in front of crowds, but the young ones, this is where their real development happens, when the pressure's on the line with a rowdy crowd, and having to deliver. So it, you know, from that standpoint, we're really a unique environment for development for young players, because the fans want to see a great product on the field, and they deserve that, and so we're really blessed to have such a fan engagement. So these players, these young guys, are really sort of starstruck when they walk out for the first time and get that engagement. But they're going to grow. These guys don't know it yet, but they're going to grow at a fast rate, and that's the expectation.
He's Eric Quill. He is the head coach of New Mexico United. So that's a really interesting thing to me, because as MLS Next is kicked off, I notice a lot of these games are really just played in front of staff. They're not played in front of big crowds. You don't have the element that you have at New Mexico United of a real crowd in the USL Championship, and, you know, 10,000 plus people. Is that something, having been on both sides of this, Eric, that, you know, I'm not trying to sound the alarm bell here, but is that something that you think is missing from MLS Next? That's a pretty important ingredient when it comes to player development.
I do. I think anybody would tell you the same, even guys working in the MLS Next environment. While it's a great league, it's a very technical league. You know, the pressure of a crowd, you can't simulate with noise on a speaker. I mean, it's something you have to have. So it's just like repetition in soccer. It's basically putting yourself in a stressful environment over and over again, and you're going to grow. You're going to sink or swim. And so I think that is an ingredient missing that's important. But the league is obviously very great with young talent. But, you know, it's a debatable argument on whether or not there's still a big gap between, you know, that environment and what USL Championship provides because of the fan engagement. So, you know, I I typically sit on the side of guys learning to play in front of crowds and having pressure on them. But there's you know, positives and negatives to both. But I just really enjoy this environment for our young guys.
Eric Quill joining us, coach of New Mexico United USL Championship. Well, having been on both sides of it, I mean, just assess level of play in MLS Next to USL Championship.
Well, you have men that have put in a lot of years under their belt, and they have, and the athleticism and the speed and the mentality is very, very high here in USL Championship, and the desire to win is very high. And it's becoming more technical, to be honest. I think if you look at the league compared to 5-10 years ago, there's some really good footballing teams out here, and they have a lot of talent, and they're getting better and better. So I think more teams are playing a better brand. But the 27, 28, 29 is still, I mean, these guys have families, they got, you know, mouths to feed. And so there's a really, you know, there's some pressure that goes with that. And these guys deliver on a daily basis. These guys are super professional. They understand what it takes to win and be a champion. And so it's a very high level environment for these guys, especially our young guys coming into and getting to learn on a daily basis from these guys that have been around doing it for a while. So I really like this league. I think it's getting more and more technical, but it's got great speed and athleticism and transition games at a high level. So it's providing pretty much everything you can ask for.
And Eric, you just touched on another piece that maybe MLS Next doesn't get as much, that older, hungry 28-year-old. You know, obviously some players are dropping down to get back and regain fitness on two teams or second teams. But, I mean, that's the other beauty of a young player being in the USL Championship, right, is the fact that they are going up against hardened veterans that are trying to make ends meet, work in life, raise families, and be a professional soccer player.
Yeah, it's probably the second part that ingredient missing is these guys have desire behind them, like I said, because of the families, because of the years of experience. And you know, as your clock is ticking, you want to try to grab as much, you know, as many trophies as possible before you have to hang them up. And so that when that end is in sight, it's a real, it motivates you to come to work every day to enjoy, you know, the blessings you have to play this game. And our guys don't take that for granted.
Yeah, we don't ever forget that. It's what a privilege to be involved. Your whole life has been about the game of soccer. I mean, from growing up in Houston, playing on youth soccer fields all over the area, your whole life. I mean, the fire got lit under you as a young kid, didn't it?
It did. I tell people in its simplest form, I've been obsessed with a round ball my whole life, and it's given me everything I could ever ask for in this life. And so I really want to make the most of it every day. I don't take it for granted, and I still enjoy it like a kid at age of 45 right now. So I love my profession. I love the people that I get to interact with in the profession every day, and that's just, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Eric, before I let you go, I just want to retell the story of you identifying Chris Richards in Alabama. You brought him to Houston for a year with the Texans when you were working at the youth level, and then you moved him on to FC Dallas. And now to see him, you know, playing over in England and representing the U.S. national team and being a good bet for the 2026 World Cup. I mean, that's got to bring it kind of full circle for you, doesn't it?
It feels like it was yesterday, to be honest. But what a story! What a great kid! What an athlete! What a footballer! I saw all those things in him immediately. And then what's even more impressive is the human being side of Chris Richards is top level as you can get. So this kid's worked as hard as anybody. He's a great, great person. Deserves everything he's gotten. He's worked to get there. He's going to continue to grow. I got a chance to see him go over to England and watch Crystal Palace in this last season. And so I'm just really proud of who he's become on both sides of the game. It's just, you know, inside the lines and outside. He's a beautiful person.
Amazing where this game has taken you as well. Next up for you is Orange County in the USL Championship, who've won 4 out of their last 5. What type of team are they?
They're impressive, man. They've got both sides of the ball going, and they're especially with the attack, they're dangerous. So we've got to really get our game plan right, get our guys motivated on the road. So every, you know, road games are always, you know, difficult. So, but we're hoping to, again, we don't want to change our mentality. It's more about us and keep an aggressive mindset, keep playing downhill. We don't take our foot off the gas for anybody. And so we want to, that mentality will stay with us all year long, no matter who the opponent is. So we feel good about where we are, but we have to respect each opponent.
He's Eric Quill. Next up will be Orange County. Then it's on to Hartford Athletic. And then back home, you'll take on San Antonio FC, who many of us are very familiar with in the state of Texas. Eric, a big thank you for doing the interview. Also, best of luck this coming weekend and in the future. And thanks, as always, for coming on.
Thanks, Glenn, for having me. Anytime, brother.
Welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, as always, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Now, if you get in a car accident, boat, motorcycle, maybe you drive an 18-wheeler, or you work in a refinery, industrial, you need the best in representation if you get in an accident. That's the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. Get the best in personal injury attorneys. That's the Daspit Law Firm, passionately pursuing justice for the injured. DaspitLaw.com. 713, call now. By the way, they are bilingual. Let's continue with the best of Soccer Matters. Really interesting interview now. We talk about youth development in America, all the American players and people that are going overseas that have been attached and connected to the Bundesliga. He is 17-year-old Yuval Renon. He joins us now. He plays for Werder Bremen. He is a top striker over there, their leading goal scorer and one of the leading goal scorers in the regional under 17 league that he plays for at Werder Bremen. Yuval, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Of course. Anytime. Thank you guys very much for having me.
Yeah. So look, here in America, there's all kinds of debates all the time about player development and what is the right pathway. You chose to go to Germany. Not an easy thing for a young guy. I think a lot of people Correct. Would be kind of intimidated. Tell me a little bit about that choice and how it came about.
Yeah, you know, I think for anyone to reach anything successful in their life, it has to come with sacrifice and, you know, some challenges along the way. And I think, you know, the best soccer in the world, or football, we should call it the best football in the world, is being played overseas, and especially Germany, the home of soccer, let's say. And so, you know, after I was doing very good in the U.S. system, I wanted a bigger challenge, you know? And so we went, my dad, with the help of my dad, obviously, which played a big role, Barack, we went and we started the journey over there. And after the first year, it's been very successful. So we're in the right place at the right time.
You had opportunities with a lot of German clubs. You ended up at Werder Bremen, which has got obviously a tremendous history.
Correct.
Tell me about why the choice Werder Bremen.
I mean, it's the top three Bundesliga team in the history of the Bundesliga. I mean, it doesn't really get better than this for youth development. And it's just the second we were there from the trials, we loved the people. We felt at home. We loved the level, the intensity at trainings, which is one of the most important things to me. And all those things just really helped us decide what we were going to do.
When you get there, homesick, transition, how easy or how difficult was that for you?
So after we signed the first 3 years, 3 months, sorry, the first 3 months were very challenging for me. You know, because a lot of people, they have their dad or one of their parents with them, but for me, it was all alone. So every game, you know, you're not seeing your parents in the stands watching you, you know, no friends coming to watch you. It's just you by yourself. And so that's very challenging. But you know, after the three games, I persevered, and I think with my dedication, discipline, and, you know, determination, all those things helped me. And at the end of the day, after those three games, I am where I am now, which is, you know, second scorer in the Bundesliga. So for the North.
Yuval Renon scores a lot of goals. By the way, you missed a couple games due to injury. You probably believe would have had a few more goals. That's what I,
it was actually for the national team. I missed 4 games because I was with the national team. I was the only player on the team that had to go for national team break. And so because the German national team isn't the same schedule as the Israel national team, the Bundesliga was going on at the time. So who knows how much more goals I could have had if I'd had those games played.
So you're speaking like a striker here. You seem to have an insatiable attitude. You don't ever want to stop scoring goals. That's the way to do
correct,
it.
Correct. Correct.
Israel under 17, you play for right now. You've also got a German passport. My understanding is you may get a U.S. passport. So right now it's with Israel. Tell me about the experience representing the country.
I mean, anytime getting the chance to represent a country that you have a passport for is amazing. It really gives you a deep feeling in the heart. But as everyone knows, national team is, you can see even in pros, it's different experience, because every player comes from their clubs and, you know, they have to put everything aside and play as a team, which I think I'm very good at. I think I'm very good at just putting everything aside for the team's benefit. And so I think we could have done better, obviously, and we were disappointed with the result, but I think we need to be proud of ourselves for where we got. And we always have room to improve.
Yuval Renan, he is a striker for the U17 Werder Bremen team, made the choice to go to Germany at a very, very young age. I did some research on you additionally. High tolerance for pain. And we're not just talking physical. We're talking about the mental strength and character, which you just talked to us a little bit about getting through those first 3 months. When you break through, though, it has to be a really confident time period, right?
Yes, very. I mean, it's a funny story, actually. The one time I broke through in Bremen was after my first call in the national team. I went there and I played against Belgium, Germany, and Uruguay. And when I came back, it just gave me this load of confidence. And as a lot of players probably know, confidence is the biggest part in soccer. You can't play without confidence. So it was a big factor. And the second I just kept getting more and more confidence, the goals just kept going up and up, and the performances got better and better. So, yeah, I think that's a big part of it.
Tell me about the crossover with the first team, because I understand where you live. You have a good view of the stadium, which correct. Basically is in front of your eyes all the time, because that's ultimately where you're trying to get, right, with the first team. So you have a lot of these visual sort of earmarks in front of you. Maybe talk a little bit about that.
Correct. So the first team trains actually at Bremen. The first team trains exactly where the youth team trains, in the same facility and an area. So with me, after my school, I always take time to go and learn from them. I go watch their trainings. I mean, who else is there better to learn from than where you're trying to get? It's a very high level. It's, you know, number 10 in the Bundesliga. It's not a joke. The intensity of their trainings, everything is very important and very high level. And that's, at the end of the day, that's where I'm trying to get to.
Yuval Renan joining us, under 17 Werder Bremen team, played at North Carolina FC, has Israeli and German passports. I understand you may get a U.S. one. That's what we were told before. So when you go and watch and observe the first team training, have you had any conversations or crossover with Josh Sargent, the U.S. international?
No, because he left exactly when I arrived.
Ah, okay.
It was just bad timing, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been fun if you... But yeah, how about other players? I mean, do they rub shoulders with you?
Yes. So we actually, the players that live in the stadium, which they call the internat, like the boarding school there, we actually have lunch and dinner with the pros. So the pros get cooks to make their food. And so those same cooks actually cook for us as well. And so we eat it in the same place together. So here and there, we'll have a conversation with them and talk with them, which is amazing. So
yeah, that really is remarkable how much crossover there is in connection with the first team. How difficult is it juggling the studies as well? I mean, you must have a jam-packed day. I mean, it's it's get up and go and until you hit the pillow, right?
Yeah, it's very intense because, you know, the school, my dad and my mom, it's very important to them that I keep my grades high. And so obviously whatever mom and dad do, I will say I will do. And so, I mean, I have to keep high grades and it's just a good balance. And Bremen helps with that, you know, like from gyms in the morning, early in the morning, private gym sessions. So then I can do school during the day. So I can have a private session before lunch, and then I can rest before the team training at night. You know, it's a balance, but when you schedule your day out right, it helps a lot.
All right. So when you play Hamburg in the under 17s, we know that's a big rivalry. Does that carry right. over to the youth levels? I'm pretty sure I know the answer, but I want to hear your answer.
I mean, I have some pictures of the ultras coming out. So yes, I would say yes, with smoke bombs and everything, flags. We had a home game against them, actually. We played where our second team plays just for that game. And they told the ultras to come out and everything. And it was amazing. It was a ton of smoke, drums. It was unbelievable. It was my first time like that.
Yuval, tell me about your qualities as a striker in your words. I've seen some video of you. I've seen you flicking balls over defenders and collecting the ball and running in and scoring. Tell me a little bit about your qualities in your mind.
I think my quality and most important quality is my understanding of the game, my understanding of movement, and understanding of where I need to be. I think those are the most important things for a striker, the movement off the ball. An understanding of the game. And then I think using that, I get into the right situations that when I get the ball, receive the ball from my midfield or my teammates, I am clinical with my finishing. So I know how to bring the ball into the goal. So I think those are very important pieces. And I think I'm also very helpful in the buildup. I think I can drop down whenever the team needs and, you know, play out and help the team. Maybe drag a defender with me to create space. Just I'm very flexible, which I think helps the team a lot. You don't want a striker that just sits there and, you know, is limited. So, yeah, I think those would be how I explain it.
Is that the biggest piece that you've learned since getting over there, the movement, mobility part, the positional sense, that kind of thing, that maybe based on the competition in the States at that level, you might not have had to be as focused on?
Yeah, so it took me the first 3 months, as I said, when it was hard to really find space to get a shot off because it was very quick. You don't have as much space and time at all. The time and space is very limited. So after the games went on, I was looking at the games. I was actually, me and my dad analyzed every game together. And so me and Barack, we looked at it and we saw what we can improve. And slowly, I saw myself finding more and more space with the ball at my feet. And then that allowed me to get my shot off, to score, things like that.
Yuval Renan, keep an eye on this name. Remember the name. He's playing at the under 17s with Werder Bremen right now. He's a high goal scoring forward. Your coach is there. How demanding are they? And, you know, I want people here to have a sense it's very different if you're training a couple times a week. It's a whole nother ball game when you're living at the facility. You're under the watch of everybody on a daily basis. That's a lot of pressure also, isn't it?
Yes, 100%. I mean, they can see me at any time because the way it works is we're all in the same story. So anything I do, they can see. And obviously the guy that they that watches over me reports to them. But my coaches and the staff for the under 17s, Bjorn Dreyer, the head coach, amazing. Nothing but positive words I can give to him. I mean, he's pushed me so far and given me such a high expectation now for coaches that I haven't seen before. He's gotten the best out of me. He's demanded the best out of me. He's made me a better player to this day. So I have nothing but great words for him. And yeah, it is a lot of pressure, but to become the best in the world, you need pressure on you. You know what I mean?
You seem to be enjoying it, though.
Yes, I am enjoying it. You know, it's where I want to be and what I want to do.
So what would be the biggest message you would give to kids back in the States that want to play at a higher level?
I think the biggest message I would give to you guys is you have to sacrifice and you have to work hard. And this has to be truly what you want to do. This can't be a side thing and this can't be just an experience. Because, you know, when people ask me, always, how is it? I don't like saying it's a fun experience because I'm not here for a fun experience. You know, I'm here to do what I want to do. So if you guys aren't looking for an experience and you're really dedicated about it, make sure that you are because it takes a lot of dedication and hard work.
When do you turn 18?
Next year, I actually just turned 17 a month ago.
Okay, so I was just thinking, me at 17, I don't think I was quite as mature as you are. You're mature beyond your years. I think
thank you
it's
very
fantastic.
Much.
You're an impressive young man, Yuval. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I think this is an enlightening interview. I will keep watch on you, and
thank
I'm
you.
Looking forward to seeing all the great things and a lot of goals.
Thank you, Glenn. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it a lot, and I'll be tuning into the show.
All right. That's Yuval Renan. He's playing, just turned 17 with the under 17 Werder Bremen team in Germany. Wow. That was a pretty impressive interview from a very, very young man.